Hello and welcome to the Powered by Rock podcast, where we're going to be speaking with Jake Lederman from an awesome punk rock band out of Melbourne, Australia called Clowns that will absolutely make you want to punch and kick in a mosh pit all day.
You're listening to the Powered by Rock podcast with your host, Isaac Kuhlman. The Powered by Rock podcast was created to help showcase some of the best rock musicians in the world and to pass on to future generations the rock music that has inspired rock fans around the world for decades. We want listeners to be able to hear great stories and life experiences directly from their favorite artists, as well as dig deeper into music theory and talk rock like no other show you've ever heard. This isn't about looking cool. It's about getting real and having a great time. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Hey, 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 welcome to the Powered by Rock podcast. I'm absolutely pumped to have Jake from Clowns on the show today, as I'm relatively a newcomer to their music, but I'm absolutely a huge fan of the music, and I can't wait to dig deeper into the mind of this mad Aussie today. So, Jake, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks, yeah, everyone.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm kind of a newcomer, but I listen to the music and it gets me pumped. So, I mean, I think when people have been a fan of yours, they know exactly what I mean. You guys put on a hell of a, you have a lot of energy and put on a hell of a show. So, you know, I first have to start by kind of referencing something that I feel is kind of a fact of life now. And I truly believe that some of the best bands are actually in the world right now are coming from Australia. You know, I absolutely love the psychedelic Porn Crumpets, surf rocking band Skags, and I definitely dig Clowns. Do you think that there's like some massive effort coming out of Australia right now that's sort of like the California rock and punk rock that was kind of huge in the 90s and 2000s?
Man, it's so interesting. I hear a lot of podcasts and a lot of like US and Canadian podcasts talk about this and like the influx of Australian bands at the moment. I think I've always felt like bands that we have here have been pretty solid as well. But I wouldn't, I mean, I never thought of it to be any better than anywhere else, but you know, like I continually hear about like the punk movement in like the 70s in Australia and like the, how you know, like the rise of AC/DC, and yeah, there's definitely a lot of respect towards Australian rock, which I think is really cool. I think it's cool that people pay attention. Yeah. But yeah, we do have a solid amount of bands, so glad you're digging it. Yeah, it puts something in the water down here, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, don't get a job, go out and be a rock star, it's no big deal. So before we get into some of these kind of deeper, greater topics that we want to bring up, I obviously want to ask you about your journey. Like, what got you guys into playing music? What got you into music and playing drums? Obviously, what were some of the artists and influences you guys had, and what made you choose this path for your life?
I think that, like, well, the band started with Stevie, the vocalist, and myself. Like, we went to school together and we grew up together. And I think as kids, like, we never really saw ourselves doing anything else. Like, I think we, you know, we played music together all through school. And then when it actually came to finishing school, my parents were kind of like, you know, like, what now? And I was just like, all I wanted to do was play music. And it was, yeah, it took a lot of convincing to, like, get that to be allowed. So we spent like that first year out of school just like playing in this band, Clowns, that we had started. And I think we played like 150 shows or something stupid like that. Like, something like, we were the kind of band that would just take any gig that was offered to us, because we just thought, oh, this band wants us to play, we'll play. And I think like in that first year we just were having so much fun with it. We didn't really have any goal, like real goals. We just wanted to get involved. Yeah. And I think, you know, after that first year, like we saw a little bit of momentum in it, and we're like, oh, what's another year of this? And what's another year of my parents wanting me to go to university or something? Yeah. And like, you know, 10 years on, like it's, you know, we just took little strides here and there and little opportunities, and that this is where we are. Nice. You know, like just happens like that. Yeah, I guess.
And what were some of the bands that you guys kind of got into that kind of started your influence? Because obviously it's a pretty, I would say it's a harder punk rock sound than you know, pop punk for sure. But it's, I wouldn't say it's like ultra hardcore where it's like, you know, just thrashy punk music, but it's kind of in between those two things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, early on for me personally, like I probably was worshiping a lot of like Australian rock and punk music, like namely The Living End and Friends of Rum. They were two bands that like I really looked up to. And then I think like, you know, there was obviously Green Day and Blink-182 that were big when I was kids, but I think maybe more specifically towards Clowns, when that band, you know, once we started that, I think it was maybe like a year or two in that I really discovered the 80s American hardcore scene. And I think I watched that documentary, American Hardcore, and I think that just sort of flipped my world a little bit. And it made me realize that, like, you don't really need to be a big band to, you know, you shouldn't care about that kind of stuff, really. Like, you should just, like, you know, be involved in your music community you know, like make connections with other bands. And like, I think that at that time I was pretty much of the mind that that was the only thing I liked, you know, like, you know, those stubborn kids that are just like, I like this and everything else sucks. Punk rock is, that's how I was. I was that kid for a little while. And so I think that was maybe the beginning of Clowns, was like 80s hardcore mixed with like, you know, a few other maybe like Trash Talk and the Bronx and that kind of thing. Like, nice. I think we sort of like went for that sound a bit earlier on.
Nice. And obviously you guys have had some lineup changes since obviously getting together. You even have, you know, I think you have five people in the band now, but it hasn't always even been a five piece, has it?
No, we started as a four piece. We have the sixth or the seventh guitar player in our band currently. We can't seem to keep guitar players, but thankfully they're the most expendable. I don't know. Like, I think that I'm sure like lots of bands can attest to this, to any band that like really wants to like give it a good crack. Like, you know, touring is not for everybody. It's pretty like, it's pretty soul crushing at times. And I think that, you know, we lost a few people on the way because of that, or maybe just because of like the amount of time that we really put into it, you know, like rehearsals and recording, and we were always constantly just thinking of the next thing, the next record, the next tour, that whatever. And it's you know, it's not for everybody.
Yeah, that's
for sure.
I mean, you kind of said what I wanted to kind of get to. I mean, when you have a band that's as dedicated as, especially like you and Stevie, I know I see Stevie on Instagram constantly talking about the band, doing everything, like, you know, hey, there's new vinyls out. We're at a pizza shop. We got a pop-up shop at a pizza place. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, he's got, I don't know if there's the whole band thinking of this or just him or what, but there's a lot of good ideas that like just bringing the visibility of the band out there that I don't think he can sit still. That's what I think, but.
Describes him pretty well.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, that will kind of wear on people if that's the attitude of some of the band, but not all of the band. Right. And, you know, it might seem like a good idea to jump on this moving ship, but if that ship's moving too fast, you're going to want to get off pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, like early on, we were very much like we need everyone involved. Everyone needs to go home and write a song and bring it in. And like, it was very much like that early on, but I think we've evolved into a place where Stevie and I and Jared as well. Jared is like a band member that's been in for a significant amount of time. We definitely, you know, focus on it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And we don't expect that of everybody.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like,
it does. I mean, everybody's got to have a role. And if their role isn't to do everything, it's just come and do this. And that's all we need. That way it takes some pressure off of bandmates. Then yeah, that makes sense.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. One thing I noticed about you guys' music is that there's definitely an evolution, and you kind of maybe touched on this, like you were really into just like that hardcore punk scene when you first started. And that's kind of how the first album was. And then, you know, I think in the Bad Blood album, I think it's called, it changed a little bit. You had some more foundations of like more complex musical arrangements, which kind of took the band into some different, you know, 9 minute, 11 minute, 10 minute songs, stuff like that. And the song Human Terror at the end of Bad Blood is actually a pretty good example of this, in my opinion. It's like 5 minutes of instrumentation. And then that basically shows, you know, how talented you guys are and just an awesome piece. It's like, you know, this well-balanced, you know, overall song. You feel like that was like a conscious effort to kind of start taking that music in that direction? Did it feel like you were changing too much too quickly? Or is it like, we just do whatever we want, and this is just a cool ass song?
I think by the time we did the second record, we had already decided that we wanted to do something different. And I think very early on, we were had decided that every record we did was going to be a bit different. Every record would introduce something new, because, you know, any music fan can agree that, like, no one wants to hear the same record over and over. I mean, some people do, but
I've said the same shit like 10 times with different artists. And it's like, if I hear the same band playing the same shit they played for 30 years, I'm like, I'm out. Like, you can only do that like 3 or 4 albums before I'm sick of it.
That's exactly right. And like, I think we just, with Bad Blood, like there was a lot of different ideas. That was like the hardest record for us to write, because it was just, there was too many cooks in the kitchen, and like, you know, we'd spent like, you know, like months and months just working on like one song. And like, anyways, getting back to the evolution of the songs, I think that, we had decided that everyone was going to be different. And like, by the time we did the third record, we had listened to some, I think I had like sort of found a love for like phases and like, you know, like elements of psych music and whatnot. And we sort of incorporated that into our sound.
Yeah. That's cool. I was going to say, speaking of Human Terror, you guys actually have a few instances of these like dual songs. I don't know how to, like, they're connected songs, I should say, like Human Error and Human Terror, Awake and Asleep, Nature and Nurture, and that's the name of the most recent album. You guys have like any, do you have personally any insight or input as to how these songs were fit together? Is that a band discussion, or is that something Stevie thinks of, or how's that go?
That's you know, I've never actually made that connection before. Like, we definitely had obviously know about all those song titles and how those songs came to be, but I have not ever thought to myself that there is three interconnecting song titles. They were all ideas. Well, I will say
Awake is kind of like a bit of an, not really even a song. It's kind of like, I think it's Roddy Piper from the song, from the movie They Live or something like that, kind of introducing your album, which is pretty cool. But it the song title obviously connects to the Asleep one later on, which is, it's kind of like a spoken word musical thing as well.
Yeah. I think that like a lot of the lyrical themes are Stevie's mind. But I can always think about like conversations back in those times when we were like just discussing ideas. And I definitely remember that the conversation of like, oh, that song's called Awake, we should call this one Asleep. And then Human, yeah, exactly the same with Human Error and Human Terror. And I think Nature Nurture, that was more of an album theme. That was like, that was like, before that album even came to be anything, we had decided that was going to be the album title, and each side of the record was going to sort of have like opposing elements to them.
Nice. So it was like a duality between the album itself.
Yeah. So like, we, at the beginning of that record, as soon as we wrote the first two or three songs, we had a whiteboard and like, we're like, okay, that song definitely belongs on side Nature. That song definitely belongs on side Nurture.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of constructed in that way, which was different for us, for sure.
I mean, there's a lot of bands that do concept albums, and I think it's interesting when a band, because every band goes in thinking like, there's going to be some sort of theme with the album, but it doesn't mean that like every song has to fit a certain concept, right? It's just like, maybe this is the mood. Maybe I wrote all the songs in the month of December, so we're calling it December or whatever, right? There's a lot of theme style albums without them being concept albums. So when it actually is like a concept album like that, instead of just two connected songs, it actually makes it even cooler, because then now I'll go back to that and listen to it and think, oh yeah, this actually, and now that you say that, some of the later songs in the album for sure have like, you know, less heavy song. They're like not so hard, right? So it makes a lot of sense. So that's interesting. Sure. And I like that. So I also really like how you guys came out with I'm Not Right. Like I do love that album. It's just this fast pace. It's kind of a statement album. Even the song titles like Grave Junkie, Eat a Gun, Jesus on Acid, and Oh Fuck My Face. Like there's so much grit on that album. I'm like, that's just so funny. Like who writes these song titles? Like this is, even just reading the cover, you're just like, okay, this band's got some humor, first of all, but also like there's some grit there. Like you guys feel like, you know, you have a different view than your younger selves did, because like, you know, it's kind of like inner jokes and all that kind of stuff. But you feel like what was said back then and made back then is still part of your band identity though, or is it just totally different?
I think we've done a lot of growing up since that record, but I think it definitely goes back to like, you know, we were all listening to a lot of hardcore and everything that we did, we were sort of like actively trying to be gritty. I think everything, yeah. You know, it's probably because everything we were listening to at the time was gritty. Yeah. And like, we were always pushing ourselves into new ways to sound gritty, whether that be like me learning how to do a blast beat or someone else learning how to play that fast or whatever. Like it was always, we're always just like, we had this rule that if you couldn't play something that someone had written, you had to physically learn it. And there was no excuse.
Yeah.
We were just like, well, you can't play it. Okay. You better go home and rehearse it then.
Well, there was a lot of... next week, cause we'll meet in like 6 days. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. But you know, like those, we still play a lot of those songs. But I think that the songwriting across the board of the band has definitely gone a little deeper. You know, like I think on the last record, Nature Nurture, like we had a few songs that were maybe a little deeper on an emotional level. And then like for the remainder of the records, we were like, oh, we should just go back and do more heavy shit. Like, yeah. So we did. And it's funny because I think that we all enjoy playing the heavier stuff more. Like,
yeah,
it's just like,
well, there's one song on there called Prick that, you know, I think it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's also like a social commentary, I think, in about two things, maybe like, you know, one specifically people saying you should separate artists from the art. He's, you know, Stevie actually sings that as like, you know, you should separate music from the musician, art from the artist and all that stuff. And I think it's referring to, you know, some of these human pieces of shit that are just famous artists like R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, not specifically mentioning them by name, because they don't play guitar in this song. It's like, yeah, but he's a good guitarist. So he's like, who gives a shit? Like, the guy's a piece of garbage, right? But I think that, you know, just because someone does make good music, it doesn't give him an excuse for anything, which is a great social commentary within that song. And I believe that punk music is inherently socially and politically aware and charged in their music in general. So do you feel like you guys have like a place within social, political, you know, just the ability to speak out? No, I know within the music for sure, but you take that away from the music and actually stand for, you know, these things on Instagram or, you know, on social media. And what would you say to people who are like, oh, musicians shouldn't give their opinions on politics?
I feel like musicians can do whatever the fuck they want. You know, like if you're writing a song, like you can write a song about anything you want. And I think something that our band hasn't really been afraid of is doing that, you know, because like if you do write a political song, you're going to have a divide. Absolutely. You can't stop that, but it just depends what message you're trying to get across. And, you know, like I think that we're in a time, especially right now, that like people really need to raise their voices, and you know, with the birth of the internet, like it's a very capable thing to make a difference, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also a very easy thing to voice your stupid opinion if you absolutely have no fucking idea what you're talking about as well.
That's so true. It works, unfortunately, both ways.
Yeah. I think I saw somewhere on like Facebook or something one time, like, or maybe it was Instagram, you know, Rage Against the Machine, Tom Morello, like, somebody said, like, I'm never listening. I didn't know, like, I just found out you guys are like anti-Republican or something like that, or anti-conservatism.
And I just found that out.
Yeah. He's like, I'm never listening to your band again. It's like, what fucking machine did you think we were raging against this whole time?
Like, that's so fucking good. Yeah. That's amazing.
I was like, this is like 2020 or 21 when I saw this. Are you serious right now? This is 30 years of this. Are you, you're insane, but yeah.
They slipped under some people's radar. Yeah.
Like, oh, you weren't listening to the lyrics. You're just bobbing your head like an idiot the whole time. And
yeah, that's it, man.
So obviously the pandemic shut you guys down when it came to the tour to promote Nature Nurture and obviously move forward and stuff. But how gutted were you, like literally right at the point where you guys are taking the band to new heights and just had everything canceled?
You know, like I think every band has definitely had their moments of feeling pretty down about everything. But I definitely find a lot of solace in knowing that we did, over the years, we have done so much touring and experienced so much. And more than anything, I think like this far into the pandemic, I think we're all just feeling really grateful that we actually had the chance to do that. We got to, like in 2019, that was our busiest touring year ever, and may well be the busiest touring year we will ever have.
It's hard to go back to doing that much when you have that big break of relaxing, right?
Oh, dude, I think we like I can't even begin to explain like how close to breaking point some of us were. But we, you know, we got to go to the States and we got to go to Europe twice and Japan and Australia all in one year. So it was a very busy year, and we squeezed in just before the pandemic hit. So like I was super grateful to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And everything like with what you're saying about like, you know, things were going really well. I feel that way about a lot of other bands, like bands that are younger than us who are getting their moment in the sun now. You know,
yeah.
And like they were just about to do all this big touring and stuff, and now it's gone.
Yeah,
you know, that I feel truly sorry for.
There's a lot of bands, you know, just got signed to a record label for the first time, about to start their first tour, national or international. And it's like, sorry, you can't go anywhere. And it's like, now what? Because like when you're that pumped about going on something like that, it really is like derailing if you don't find another plan B, right? Because at that point you can't keep the flame going for a year and a half or 2 years without some momentum. It's like, no, there's no gasoline here. Like you can't just keep pouring, you know, gas on a fire that doesn't have any flame or whatever. But yeah,
totally. I mean,
that's a good point. So one thing I did see, which I thought was absolutely awesome, and you mentioned Living End earlier, you actually got to do a couple songs. I think they're coming for the new album with the producer, Woody Anison, who actually worked with the Living End there in Melbourne. You know, I actually think Living End is just absolutely, probably no disrespect to you guys, probably the most famous or whatever, the most legendary punk rock Australian band. Now you guys are obviously the rising guard, but I didn't even know punk rock music existed in Australia until I heard the Living End back in like 98. And I'm like, holy shit, these guys are awesome. And dude, yeah, standing up on his upright bass and just slamming on it as hard as I can. I was like, these guys can rock. So I thought that was awesome that I saw that you got to work with Woody Anison. Now he worked on one of their newer albums, but did that kind of experience feel different and extra special at all for you guys?
I think that working with Woody was definitely a different experience. Like we hadn't worked with a producer like him before. It was really good in a lot of ways. and really challenging in a lot of other ways. I think that the first three records that we, sorry, the from Bad Blood to Nature Nurture, so the three records we did, we did them all in the same studio with the same person, and we were very much in our comfort zone in that space. To work with a producer who was really contributing to a lot of the instrumentation and a lot of the structure and a lot of the tones and things like that was very different for us. It was an experience. I'm unsure that we'll do it again. You know, so much respect to him because he is a very talented dude who's made some great records. But it's hard to say if we would do it again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like you have to give up some of your control to let the producer do their job properly. And in some respects, producers are really good at this. And in some respects, it's a really good fit. But then other times it's like, man, it's like smashing, you know, your head into a wall or whatever. But, you know, it's interesting to get that perspective because, you know, I don't think a lot of people who listen to music, like on just like a surface level, even consider the producer's job in the role of how an album comes together, how it changes the sound of a band or, you know, whatever. Like Rick Rubin has done some of the biggest artists in the world. And every time he touches an album, you can distinctly tell when it's a Rick Rubin album from the rest of their actual albums. But most people don't even pay attention to that. They're just like, oh, this is the new Weezer album or Nirvana album or whatever. And they just go off and listen to the album, not really understanding that literally it could be one person that's giving these guys notes here and there that can change some stuff that, you know, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. But in the end, that's the way it goes with the producer, I think.
That's so true. That's so true. And, you know, like, that's not to say that we'll never work with a producer again. I just feel like maybe we could find a better fit. But again, like Woody has made some records with some of my friends' bands, and those records I fucking love.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's just like a bit of a shock to my system or our system to like hear it in a new way. But you know, you win some, you lose some.
It's cool. So let's talk about drums for a minute because you rock them pretty damn hard yourself. And you know, you can see this little shitty electronic set that I got back here, but you know, what's your theory on your role in the band? Because, you know, there's lots of these quotes out there and, you know, I always talk about this quote from Buddy Rich, attributed to Buddy Rich, who was, you know, this legendary drummer from like the '50s and sixties from memory, who said something like, an average band with a great drummer sounds great. A great band with an average drummer sounds average. Do you agree with that?
I think that in the punk world, it's a bit different because I think that like, there are a lot of drummers that I grew up listening to that I would consider to be great drummers, but they're not really like the tightest drummers, you know?
Yeah, not like, technically the most talented or something like that.
I think that it goes with every instrument. Like you don't have to be the greatest player. It's just more like the attitude of the person playing it a lot of the time. Like I think that the Ramones were a great example of that. Yeah. And like there's I could go on and on and on about bands that I think just had this like, you know, vibe about them. This like this grit and attitude, like Adolescence, you know, like, or like the Dead Boys or like the Spits, you know, they're all fucking like loose and raw, but like, that's what, there's like an appeal to it.
Yeah.
That said, there are some insanely great drummers that I do feel like make the band, you know, or like the band couldn't exist without them. And like, you know, I would, you know, say like the Melvins, like Dale Crover is like one of a kind. He's like an insane drummer. Like Gordy from the band Friends of Rum in Australia, that guy's insane. Bill Stevenson from The Descendants.
Yeah.
That band wouldn't even exist without him, you know?
Yeah. And that guy makes drumming look way too fucking easy. I just was watching like an Instagram live of him. He's just like, that. I'm like playing just like one-handed rolls. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you do not look like you're that good at drums. But then when you actually hear the song, you don't even think of how technical it is. He's like,
yeah.
And you're like, You make that look really easy, because when I try that, I look like an actual moron sometimes.
He just full has figured out a way to effortlessly play.
Yeah.
He doesn't. And like, I think that's something that when you get older as a drummer, you learn that your body can't take as much movement anymore. Yeah. So you just sort of learn to do it a bit easier.
Yeah.
And like,
no
sadly,
emotions.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And sadly, I've experienced some very bad RSI in my wrist in the last few years. So I've definitely been watching a lot of his drumming, trying to like figure out just how he does it.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting.
Yeah. I actually have a friend who's a drummer who had the exact same thing. He's like, you want my drum set? Because I can't even use my hands anymore. My wrists are done. I was like, really? And he's my age. I mean, I'm 39. He's 39. Actually he turned 40. I'll turn 40 this year too. But yeah, I mean, I'm like, and he wasn't like in a touring band. They played a few shows down in San Francisco relatively often. But I mean, when you're playing and practicing that much, even if you're just hitting a drum pad, yeah, your wrists are going to get pretty damaged over time.
Yeah. And I think it's also just that learning that you don't actually need to hit as hard as you might think you do. Or yeah.
Well, Jake, everybody wants to hear it as loud as possible. God damn it.
Man, like that's what I thought too, but my body's given out, man. It's fucked.
Yeah, so I think every band member kind of has this a different answer for this, and you know, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but you know, you say that every drummer kind of has an attitude. What do you think is the job of the drummer? Obviously they're there to keep beat, right? But every person in the band might say like, oh, this guy's like this in our band. This guy's like this in our band. And it's not just the timekeeper, right? But that, I mean, that's essentially the basic job of the drummer. Do you have an extension of the band that you think that drummers or you as a drummer have?
I think it's just different for every band. Like, you know, I think that I can think of a bunch of drummers that are irreplaceable in my eyes. Like,
yeah,
but I also feel like the role of the drummer in a lot of bands, aside from being a timekeeper, can just it can be so different across the board. Yeah. Like I don't know, like it, like in our band, like the writing of the music is like everybody contributes to that. Yeah. We're a very big collaborator on that. I don't know how many other bands are like that. Definitely some, definitely yeah. Descendants, definitely. I'm unsure as to how to answer that.
The reason why I bring this up is because I am a guitar player. I played guitar since I was like 11, but
yeah,
I played in a band for a while, did solo stuff for a while. And then I joined a band as a drummer because I'd been, you know, playing drums off and on just as, you know, to keep something else as a hobby. And I quickly kind of found out that like you can change the overall sound of the song. So like the guitar player singer that was the head of the band, he was really into like playing folky chords. And so he's like playing this folky style music. And I'm like, well, we're going to make this more up-tempo. I'm punk rock, like rock music. Like I like this up-tempo kind of stuff. And, you know, he's singing about like, you know, suicide, and like it's not in a depressing way. He's like, it's called Get Out of Jail Free Card was the song, but it was like, you know, even if I do something and I make a fool of myself, well, I've always got suicide in my back pocket, so that's my like Get Out of Jail Free Card, which is kind of, it was a lot of joke songs like that and making light of certain situations. But I'm like, I'm putting these like, you know, like, you know, 60s Beatles type like dun, 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 and it's like making it like this upbeat song about suicide versus like, you know, it could have easily just have been a downer song if I'm just playing some like something super like dark or something. But I think they think there is like an attitude that the song is being given by drums.
Absolutely. I think that every drummer has their own influences and their own way of playing. And even it can even be as like specific as like where a drummer would hit the snare or where the drummer would hit a cymbal, and like that comes to be a really big difference. I can think of a few bands. Like there's this band from Sydney, Australia called Royal Headache, who are really great, and I loved that they were one of those bands that like they released this perfect record. And when the second one rolled around, I was like, there's no way that this record could be better than the first. And it was. So they were just this incredible band. And I followed them for a while and stuff. And then the drummer left the band and they replaced that drummer with this insanely great drummer that was so good, but it just didn't feel the same.
Yeah.
And I think it was just the way that the guy was playing. He was like, the original drummer was like playing, he was like almost struggling to keep up, but it was like it worked so well.
Yeah,
it's like, so I think there's definitely like a stylistic thing that doesn't necessarily connect with talent, so to speak, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, Pink Floyd actually had this kind of situation. I think it's Nick Mason was the drummer. He specifically said, like, I'm not like one of the greatest drummers. And there were times when basically Roger Waters, David Gilmour were like, play this. And he's like, I physically can't play that. So this is what I'm going to play instead. They actually even started replacing him on later albums with other drummers to fill in for songs that they wanted, you know, bigger, better drums in. And I'm like, that's crazy that you're like one of the biggest bands in the world. And I don't know if he's just like lazy. I never got that, but I'm like, you know, maybe they're too demanding. I don't know, but it's like, that's interesting that, you know, all the time, all the money that you could put into being as good of a drummer as you want to be. And you're just like, I physically can't play that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like another example of this was the guy who replaced Bill Ward in Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
That dude, like, He's clearly like a very famous drummer who's amazingly talented, but he can't play like Bill Ward. Yeah. I just remember being at like on their farewell tour, just watching him play. And he did this big like 5-minute drum solo. And I was just like, man, this is not Bill Ward. This is just a stadium rock show, which is, you know, they have to do it.
Yeah. But I mean, it just didn't feel the same. Keep the money train rolling, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I'm just probably the one bitter fan in the crowd that was like, yeah, like, you're not Bill Ward.
You suck. Like throwing out some really technical stuff. And you're like, this isn't Black Sabbath. This isn't Bill Ward, though. Like, get off the stage.
That's it.
That's funny. So, yeah, I mean, you actually kind of mentioned this. And I was actually reading something about the Yardbirds the other day. You're saying like, oh, luckily guitar players are expendable. The Yardbirds had like, you know, Eric Clapton, then they got Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck. And it's like this one band had like three of the greatest guitar players of all time in their same band. And, you know, most people don't even know who the Yardbirds are, but it's interesting that like, as good as those guys are, they could have been replaced in a band. Like that's insane to me. And like Jeff Beck was the longest tenured Yardbird from memory. And it's like, he's probably over time the least known of the three, because Eric Clapton still famous, Jimmy Page still, you know, Led Zeppelin still monstrously famous, and Jeff Beck was kind of overshadowed by that, you know, monstrous fame that those guys had, and they both left the band. And obviously Jimmy Page went on to start Led Zeppelin, which is interesting. And then that was a whole supergroup theory that him, Keith Moon, Jeff Beck, I think somebody else in the band were like, let's start a super group. And then Keith Moon said it'll go over like a lead balloon, something they called them Led Zeppelin, which just an interesting little trivia fact for people who don't know about the Yardbirds or Led Zeppelin history or anything like that. But yeah, I think that's, you know, as you said, drummers I don't think are as replaceable as guitar players, because you know, some of my favorite bands, when they change a drummer, unless that person brings an elevated ability, like Blink-182, Travis Barker brought an elevated drum ability to that, which just kind of put them over the top. But then there's other bands that like, it's just a lateral move instead of like an elevated move. And it's like, this isn't the same. It's just a different sound now, which doesn't match up.
Yeah. That's so true. And like, you know, that's not to say at all that guitar players and bass players can't, you know, it's not to say they don't have their own unique style or way of playing. Yeah. They definitely do. I think every guitar player that we've had in our band has brought something new. But I do think that if you can teach a guitar player to play a song, they can play it closer to the way it's written than trying to teach a drummer to play it the way that it's written, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because like I feel like when I played my drum parts to my own songs that I would play drums for, it was just the natural way that I play the drums. But then when I try to go figure out how to play drums to somebody else's song, I'm like, I don't understand how to do this. It seems straightforward, but then it's not. Something's off and I can't figure out that one little piece here or there. So yeah, that's a pretty good shout.
That's it. Yeah.
And yeah, you can just go online and look at all the tabs and play guitar just note by note if you really want.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but like I know so many talented guitar players. So many. I know way less talented drummers, I think, you know.
You're right.
Like,
and there's even less bass players out there. It's like, wow, if you find a bass player, that's like a unicorn.
If you find a bass player that is actually a bass player, then yeah, that is a unicorn. But
I think converted guitar player or drummer or something.
That's it, man. I was actually a converted drummer like early on, because when I was like 14 years old and I first started playing in bands, everyone I knew was a guitar player and everyone was really good. And I can play guitar okay, but I was not as good as a lot of people that were in our circle. And there was just a total lack of drummers. And I was just like, I'm just going to try this.
Yeah.
And see how it goes.
Yeah.
And I think for like the first 3 years, I swear to God, I was just like faking it till I made it. Like, I didn't consider myself a real drummer until,
yeah, like, but I'm the best drummer you ages. Guys know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. Cause I mean, if you think about it, you know, bass players, true drummers, even if bands break up, they can go out and get another job with another band quite easily. Guitar player, singer, their band breaks up. Well, they're attached to that band, face and everything, right? People know those people. You don't necessarily get attached to a drummer unless you are a musician, or a bass player unless you are a musician. And then, you know, if they go out and just pick up, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate broke up, this band from Seattle, Washington back in the 90s, two of those guys now are in the Foo Fighters. Nobody knows that. Nobody knows that two of the guys from the Foo Fighters were in a band called Sunny Day Real Estate together. Nobody cares.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That is interesting though. I think the Foo Fighters has just such a great lineup of great musicians though.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I knew that, but obviously there's, what's his name from the Germs?
Pat Smear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, just Dave Grohl, I think has an ear for musicians.
Yeah. And I mean, being an incredibly talented drummer / singer, songwriter / guitar player, like, all right, we get it, Dave. You're a very talented guy. I freaking love that guy though. Like his attitude and his ability to just like not really give a shit and be cool to everybody is like beyond a musician, right? He's just a good dude. So it's pretty,
yeah.
It's good to see that, you know, good people actually still can make it without selling out their soul.
That's so true.
Yeah.
They're few and far between.
Yeah. So I have a few more things. So hopefully you're okay to stick around for a little bit. I'm not ruining your day or anything.
No, cool. You're all good. I'm in lockdown, man. There's nothing going on here.
Can't even get a damn haircut, man. Yeah. So you guys are actually one of the few bands now. It's getting more and more common, but you have a female in the band now. Obviously back in the 90s, that kind of seemed impossible to find unless it was like, you know, a really popular pop group or something like that. But now it's a lot more commonplace, and probably for good reason, because women are actually quite badass at playing and really bring a lot of energy to, especially like a punk show or punk rock bands. So I'm just curious, like, how did, you know, Hanny, she plays bass and backup vocals, obviously. How did she kind of come back? How did she come into the band? And what kind of feedback do you guys get about having a female in the band now?
I think we had just parted ways with our bass player. Previous to Hanny, and we were trying to, we were on the hunt for someone who would fit right. And one thing that we knew that we wanted was someone that could sing as well. Because we knew that if we could get a bass player that can sing, that will add an element to the band, another instrument. And our manager at the time was from Queensland. And he was like, I know, you know, there's this girl I know called Hannah who does solo stuff and she's really great. I think we should, I think you guys should check her out. And we like listened to her. She had some solo music and we listened to that and we were like, she can really sing, like really fucking sing. And our manager was like, yeah, she grew up playing in punk bands in Brisbane. She's like very respected in the Brisbane community. And so like maybe like a week or two later, we actually were playing in Brisbane anyway, and we had a replacement bass player. And she happened to be playing at the same venue upstairs at just an acoustic show. So we like managed to go and just catch her show. And we could see that she was a very, very well-versed guitar player, very well-versed singer, very well-versed songwriter. And she was just like a triple threat. And we were like, man, like we need this person in our band really badly. Nice. So we approached her and we had a jam. She picked things up really quickly. She was already a fan of the band and stuff like that. And then we just asked her the question. We were like, you know, would you be willing to join our band and all the things that come with that, like move, like essentially moving to Melbourne and dropping half your life to be in this band. And she was up for it. So she literally like,
she's like, broke up with her, too hot anyway, fuck it.
Yeah. She broke up with her boyfriend and moved down to Melbourne.
Damn.
And jumped in the van with us. I think that they broke up for other reasons, but it went like that, and she's been an incredible addition to the band in a number of ways, musically and sonically, and like just having great ideas, but then also introducing this idea, definitely like a more like feminine and inclusive show. You know, like I find at our shows, like there are so many young women that like worship her, you know,
because she's
incredibly badass. Like she's not a bass player, like we were mentioning before, but yeah. I feel like she has become one of the greatest bass players I know.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, the bands that do have like a big presence of a singular female or a few females that, you know, just rock really hard. Generally, when women, you know, younger women especially, see them doing that, it's like kind of a bit of a mind-blowing moment, because it's like, oh, it's just like 30 straight bands of like dudes at a punk festival, and all of a sudden you got this female up there just shredding or you know, screaming or singing or whatever, and it's like, that girl is awesome. Like this is definitely a unique experience for females to watch that than just a bunch of old white guys or something.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's different here in Melbourne, but I feel like there's definitely a movement of you know, inclusivity in bands. I feel like people, when they start bands there, they make a conscious effort to make it diverse. And I think that's, you know, maybe, you know, partly political, but also because it's pretty fucking boring to just see band after band of dudes. Like, it is actually incredibly boring.
Yeah, it's like, oh, so this sounds very similar to the last thing. You're bitching about the same shit as the last guy. Yeah, it is.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, I think that it makes for a very awesome little musical ecosystem just to have an incredibly diverse and, like, different and thriving music community like it is down here. It's really, really good.
For sure. That's awesome. So before you go, I've got a few more questions, but I have to ask you a few Australian questions, because I'm going to ask this of every Australian group or artist or, you know, whatever that I speak to, because I personally love Australia. I lived there for about 4 months in Gold Coast, just south of Surfers Paradise, for about 4 months in 2015. So love it.
Love
the food. There's not a lot of the food that's different, but there's some food that I absolutely miss. And I love a lot of the cultural things. So I'm going to ask you three questions. Mm-hmm. Number one, what's your favorite kind of meat pie?
I don't eat meat, but, you know.
I had a feeling you might do that.
But
you can get a veggie, like a potato pie.
Yeah, you know what? There's a place in Sydney called Newtown Pies, and every time I'm in Sydney, I make an effort to visit this place, because they just do a fucking awesome curry pie.
Nice.
That is really, really good. But that said, when I did eat meat, I liked a shepherd's pie.
Nice. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a steak and mushroom guy, but I love them all. Like, even And not so much the 4 and 20s, but I'll eat a 4 and 20 in a pinch.
Yeah, 4 and 20s were just like, you know, that's the footy pie. That's what you have when you're at the footy.
Exactly. Sausage rolls. Do you like sausage rolls, or you just don't eat, or did you ever like sausage rolls?
Man, I love sausage rolls, and I miss sausage. You know, I might not be a meat eater, but I miss eating meat all the time. Yeah. And sausage rolls, yeah.
Hopefully I'm not really like turning good. You over to the, like tipping you over to the other side, like, oh yeah, go eat a sausage roll and a meat pie today or something.
Nah, dude, I'm in lockdown and I have a freezer filled full of all kinds of this shit. So <Yeah.
laughs> are you a fan of the footy? And if so, who's your team?
I am a fan of the footy in like maybe the lowest sense. Like I enjoy it when my team is doing well.
So you're not a Demons supporter then?
No. Well, you know, I'm really happy that the Demons won.
Yeah.
Because they had like a 52-year drought or something like that. But I'm a Bombers fan, Essendon Bombers.
Essendon, yeah. And
when I was a kid, they were like killing it. You know, they won, I think, 2 grand finals in a row. And that was pretty special when I was a kid. But I've just grown up and they... you know, haven't been the best team, and I'm okay with it, but it just definitely makes me less interested.
Yeah. Not consistently making the finals at all. That's for sure.
Yeah. But when they do make the finals, I'll pretend that I was with them all along.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you didn't say the Demons, cause I'm a Geelong fan and obviously they absolutely smashed us in the semifinals or whatever. So I was not so happy about that. So I'm glad that at least you picked somebody, not the Demons this year.
Why did you pick Geelong out of curiosity?
Well, I got into, when I got there and I was watching footy and stuff, Patrick Dangerfield was actually on the Adelaide Crows. And I was like, this dude's freaking amazing. This guy is all over the place. Looks badass. He's like out there tackling dudes, like suplexing him and stuff. I'm like, this guy's awesome. Then he went to Geelong and I'm like, oh, and Geelong's got a really good team, like good, you know, group of guys. And then they got Gary Ablett Jr. And I was like, oh shit. This is about to blow up. This team's about to get great. And they got like Gary Rowan and all these other guys. And I was like, dude, this is a full team. And yeah, they've been good and they just can't get over that hump to actually win lately, but to win the whole thing. But yeah, that's the team. And I even have like the watch AFL app so I can watch it over here in the United States, which it's just,
that's awesome.
It's a sad existence when you keep seeing your team lose like right at the end.
Yeah. But you know, I feel like if you were a Geelong fan, You know, in like recent years, you've had a lot of highs.
You can't complain too much because they're winning a lot of games. They're just not winning the championship. So it's a good team. It's fun to watch. It's just disappointing every year at the end.
Yeah, I feel that.
And the last Australian question I'm going to ask you is, do you like cricket or is it too boring?
I like cricket. I don't watch it as much as I used to. I don't think it's boring. A lot of people think it's boring. I don't think it's boring. I'm the kind of person that'll like, I'll put it on the TV while I'm doing other things and just, you know, check every now and then, you know.
And then you're like, oh, somebody's on a 34 and going and, you know, then just smash and stuff. And you're like, oh, sweet. Like, go check that out for a while. I'm the same. I love cricket. A lot of guys I know in Queensland actually play cricket, you know, semi-professionally or whatever at the state level and the city level. So I actually thought it was a lot of fun. I think people are like, oh, it's like 5 days. Can you watch something that's 5 days long? I'm like, you're not sitting there watching every minute of the thing unless you like go to the stadium. But even so, like there's things happening. It's like if you went to 5 straight baseball games and instead of just taking the score for one day and saying you won, you combine the scores for those 5 days. What's so different about that? Like people do that all the time. So
that's so funny. I like it. I definitely like it. I mean, I probably watch one game a year and that's the Boxing Day test.
Yeah.
But not, you know, I do enjoy the sport. It's good.
Yeah. Cool. So your manager, Florian, actually had mentioned that you're actually a fan of the band, a few of the bands that have been on the show already, notably Death by Unga Bunga and Decent Criminal. So first of all, fuck yeah, everyone should be. They're both awesome. I was just curious if you had any other bands that you'd recommend or, you know, tell our listeners to go check out and maybe not everyone has heard of. We talked a lot about a lot of bands that people can go check already. And I don't think you're going to be mentioning like a Cold Chisel. They're pretty popular in Australia, not so much everywhere else. Any other bands that are coming up that you're into right now?
Probably many. Do you want me to recommend an Australian one?
Anywhere. Australian. So let's say one Australian, one non-Australian, if you got two.
Okay. I think the band Private Function from Melbourne, worth checking out. They're like starting to do really good things over here. They're like a very like humorous punk rock band that have this like very unique style of humor. They have their guitar player is the same guitar player as that band Nightbirds from the US.
Okay.
So yeah, I would definitely recommend them. On a international level, I gotta say I've been smashing that Death by Oonga Boonga record so much. It's so good. But yeah. Maybe just looking through my playlist here, maybe
put you on the spot.
Yeah. I mean a lot of the bands that I like aren't necessarily like hugely relevant. what about okay, there's a really great band called Metal Leg. Yeah, from New York. And it's a side project from the guys from Dirty Fences, if you've heard of that band.
I haven't heard of them either, so I'll check both of those out.
I love it. It's really cool.
Awesome. That's good because, you know, anytime we can get recommendations, you know, I always say I grew up in like a very rural area of the United States. And so like it was hard to find good music. And one of the reasons why I want to do this podcast is to share good music with people who aren't connected to that. And so if I can be like, hey, here's the, you know, here's Jake from Clown saying, go check out Metal Leg and, you know, everybody else and Private Function. Yeah, go do that. Cause if you like clowns, you're probably going to like this stuff, even if it's not the same sound, you know, the people that like this kind of music probably like this other kind of music. So I always like that. And, you know, it's not the same as like YouTube suggesting something totally like I literally was listening to your guys' music the other day. The album ended and like three songs later, Marilyn Manson came up. I'm like, no, I don't listen to Marilyn Manson, dude. Like that's not even the same. Nothing is similar to that. And I'm like, what is this? Like I had to look down. I'm like, oh my God, how did it come up to that suggestion? Like nothing said to be bad about Marilyn Manson. They got their own fans, all that stuff, but never been a fan. Never like it's not on my radar. Wouldn't think that Clowns is anywhere near associated to Marilyn Manson. So it was just odd that that's what their algorithm came up with.
Sometimes the algorithm really hits hard. Sometimes it's a total miss, you know?
Absolutely. So obviously we'll add some links to the show, to your guys' music in the show notes below the episode, but do you have anything you'd like to say to the fans or fans that haven't found you guys yet before we go today?
Listen to us. Hope you enjoy it. Hope to get back to the States very soon. And be good to each other. And nice. I love you.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank Jake from the Aussie punk band Clowns for the awesome conversation today. And if you haven't checked out their music yet, make sure to go to the show notes below this episode for links to their music. If you like what you heard on the show, be sure to actually subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends on social media. Also, if you want to check out some of our written content or any of the products or merch that we have available, go to poweredbyrock.com to read our absolutely free rocking blog full of album reviews, interviews, and lists to keep you entertained, and find our gear as well so you can pick up some items to play and look like a rock legend. That's our show for today. We'll see you soon for the next episode. Until then, rock on.